Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all. This Tuesday, the 25th of October, and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. With me, Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Tanzania's President John Magufuli marks a year since his election. What do ordinary Tanzanians think about his leadership style?
I think he's doing a great job revealing the ghosts workers, people who were just paid, but in reality they never existed.
He only needed to embrace democracy for a better Tanzania.
French authorities have started moving thousands of migrants out of a makeshift camp near Calais to other parts of France, but local residents are unimpressed.
Ça va pas changer, ils vont se déplacer ailleurs, je pense.
It won't change anything. Those who want to go to England will stay here in Calais.
Also on the program, students in Senegal develop an app that provides information on recycling waste material as one way of protecting the environment. These stories and much more coming up in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Tanzania's President John Magufuli today marks 1 year in office. To many Tanzanians, Magufuli, also nicknamed the bulldozer because of his leadership style, has done a great job, especially in fighting corruption, cutting back spending, and reducing bureaucracy. But others say he needs to tone down his no-nonsense style and engage with the opposition. This is because in some instances, Magufuli has made impromptu visits to government institutions and public hospitals and sacked incompetent officials on the spot. In addition, he has shown little regard for the opposition parties. In a moment, we'll be hearing from a political commentator. But first, let's hear what ordinary Tanzanians think of President Magufuli.
Well, I think he's doing a great job revealing the ghosts workers, people who were just paid, but in reality, they never existed. So I think revealing such kind of a fallacy has a great contribution to the state and as well as saving the funds that would have been just lost without any important duties.
There are some issues that we think he should do better than what he does currently, especially when it comes to what he says on the public. Some of his cabinet members are having some different information. You know, a certain minister will say something like we have medicine, at the same time maybe the vice president will say something else. So that is something that shows the government is not very well coordinated in terms of the information that they provide to the public.
The president is doing a very great job, although the majority of us are claiming that the life of many Tanzanians has become so hard.
The first time he started to talk, he talked with the business people and he promised that he will be working with them, but he warned them that they have to pay the tax. And that showed me exactly that this president is serious about this issue.
Many people are complaining about the democracy. He's making decision himself without involving opposition, and that is something I see is wrong.
He only needed to embrace democracy for the change, for a better Tanzania.
Voices of ordinary Tanzanians speaking about their president. And from a more analytical point of view, I spoke to General Ulimwengu, a political analyst on the Great Lakes region, and I started by asking him his assessment of President Magufuli's overall performance.
First of all, Magufuli is definitely a different kind of president from the president that we have had so far. He has distinguished himself from the other presidents in his style because he has a more direct and very frontally driven style in which he goes out and seeks to do things directly and without too much consideration for protocol and things like that. He has an eye for something that can be saved in terms of costs when it comes to doing anything that is considered to be routine. So he has actually marked himself as somebody who prefers to go and in a hands-on kind of style and direct things to do. In so doing, He has ruffled a few feathers. He has rubbed some people the wrong way. He has upset protocol, and he has not been very apologetic. He has a style that is both refreshing and sometimes abrasive, to say the truth.
His relationship with opposition parties is somewhat frosty. They even accuse him of being a dictator. Is this just rhetoric, or does he really need to change his style of government?
His relationship with the opposition parties has not been very smooth. He has been rather condescending when it comes to dealing with them. He has given them the cold shoulder most of the time. He has seriously restricted the political space in which they can evolve. He doesn't look like he's looking for credentials as a great Democrat when it comes to that kind of thing. He is bent on fulfilling the promises that he gave to the people of Tanzania who elected him, and he has no time for politicking or allowing other people to continue politicking. So in that aspect, yes, some people have called him a dictator, and maybe they have a point.
I was speaking to Generali Ulimwengu, a political analyst based in Dar es Salaam.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
The president of the Assembly of State Parties to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, Siddiqui Kaba, has invited Burundi and South Africa to reconsider their decision to withdraw from the ICC. The Assembly of States Parties represents the 124 countries that are members of the ICC. Kaba said that a dialogue must be open to address issues the member states have with the court. He stressed that an international criminal court is needed and states must work together to fight against impunity around the world. Kaba spoke as South Africa's main opposition party criticized the government's decision to withdraw from the court, saying it is illegal and asking the highest court in South Africa to review the matter. But how concerned should the International Criminal Court be by the defections by countries in Africa? A question I put to Mark Ellis, Executive Director at the International Bar Association in London.
The court has to be very concerned right now about what this means, because if this is the start of a full withdrawal from many countries in Africa, and Africa holds the single most important block of countries for the International Criminal Court, but if they start moving away from the court, if they start deciding they too withdraw, then I think you're looking at a court that will be losing its legitimacy and losing its internationalism as well, because the court can't exist if you have a significant number of states that are saying we are now withdrawing from the court.
You are speaking to us from the U.S., where last week the State Department expressed concern about South Africa pulling out of the court, yet the United States itself is not a member of the ICC. Doesn't this mark of double standards something that African countries might find hard to stomach?
Oh, absolutely. It's disingenuous at best for the United States to criticize any country for deciding not to engage with the International Criminal Court when the United States has simply ignored a request to engage with the court, to support the court. And this is one of the major problems. And I think here is a point where Africa as a continent and countries within Africa that are members of the ICC, this is where they do have a legitimate complaint. The United States, Israel, Russia, these are countries that I think could clearly be within the sight of the International Criminal Court for alleged crimes, international crimes committed by each of these states, and yet they are outside the jurisdiction of the court. And yet the court finds itself engaged with many other countries, particularly in Africa. So I think that criticism from Africa about the United States and other developing countries that have not yet engage with the court, I think that's a legitimate criticism. And I think it's a shame that the United States and other countries have not support of the court. And until they do, I don't think they have any claim to criticize any country who has in fact engaged with the court but is deciding now to withdraw.
South Africa's departure presumably will weigh most heavily on the court because of its size and stature as a democracy. Will South Africa's departure open floodgates, causing one African country after another to leave as well, you think?
When you have a country of such importance, such as South Africa, decide that it's withdrawing from an entity that represents international justice, as the International Criminal Court does, as the Permanent Court of International Justice, then that signals a really significant step away from supporting international justice as a whole. And I am afraid that other countries, particularly within Africa, will decide that, well, if South Africa moves away from the court, there's no reason why we should not move away from the court. And so this is why South Africa's decision, much more than Burundi's decision, is so devastating for the court.
Mark Ellis, Executive Director at the International Bar Association in London.
Africa on the move.
Liberia's fledgling fashion industry was brought to its knees by the Ebola epidemic. And the country's high level of poverty means that Liberians simply do not have the cash to buy fashionable clothes from abroad. But one determined Liberian is working on a solution. Isata Pasewe is encouraging young women to learn how to sew to give Liberia's fashion industry a welcome boost. This report by Abakal Jalo is read now by Ole Tangen Jr.
Isata Pasewe is working away at her sewing machine, but she isn't a regular seamstress. She's a fashion designer in her own right. The 33-year-old designs uniforms for several schools in Liberia. Her desire to help other women brought her into this line of work.
Actually, what inspired me is looking at, more especially when it comes to women. I actually want to empower women because women play a major role in a society. Women are always vulnerable.
She is now training her friend Rose Kasse, and the two women plan to tailor women's clothes and sell them into several local boutiques. Young women account for 40% of Liberia's population of 4.7 million. Most of them have no schooling. Vocational institutes offer alternatives to the traditional role of women. Not so long ago, Isata Pasewe was a trainee herself. She graduated with a certificate in tailoring. Today, she, in turn, trains other women. Her current trainees dropped out of secondary school at an early age. Elfrida Saki and the others hope these classes will launch them into a career in tailoring.
She teaches women how to build their future. Women who are not educated learn how to sew and how to do something. Since you are not going to get an office, you learn how to sew clothes to be able to open your own tailor shop.
Isata and her friend visit the owner of Kasawa Fashion House. Tina Kapan runs the only fashion store in Monrovia out of a garage next to her house. Pasewe has come to show Tina her new designs. The seamstress wants her mentor to showcase and sell the clothes in her store. Here is Tina Kapan.
It was time that Liberia come up with her own made in Liberia product, our own designs to identify with Liberia. Then I realized, okay, we need to have a school where, a fashion school, that we can mentor them in there too as well, you know, guide them, you know, through educating them on the whole, how the whole industry works.
In the afternoon between classes, Isata tries to register her business. But the process is a headache. It takes a whole hour just for her to learn what certificates are needed and what requirements have to be met.
It is difficult to get all of these requirements they want us to give them because some we don't even have, so the requirements are too many to register a business right now.
She's never heard of some of the requirements, but she's determined to meet them all because she needs to have a registered business to compete for a major government contract. While encouraging others, Esata Pasewi dreams of helping to rebuild Liberia's fashion industry stitch by stitch.
That report was by Abakal Jalo and presented by Ole Tangen Jr. French authorities have started clearing thousands of migrants from a makeshift camp near the northern port of Calais, known colloquially as the Django. Around 1,200 police officers, some in red gear, were on hand as score of Sudanese and Eritrean men queued from dawn outside the hangar to be among the first to be put on coaches for shelters across France. This report from Barbara Kostolnik is read now by Eunice Wanjiru.
For those migrants determined to leave the makeshift camp at Calais as the demolition crew prepares to go to work, there is a choice of two destinations, either to Bretagne in the west of France or Aquitaine in the south. Christian Saint-Lom heads the refugee relief organization Auberge des Migrants.
Everything's going very well. They are not pushing or shoving. Those who are waiting here in front of the registration centre can see the buses that will take them away, and they can't wait to get on board.
The makeshift jungle camp served as a temporary shelter for as many as 8,000 people. Winter is approaching, and memories of last year's icy cold spell, which was especially harsh for those living in makeshift accommodation, are still fresh. 5,000 migrants want to leave Calais, and they are going to be distributed among some 450 reception centres across France. Bernard Cazeneuve is the French Interior Minister.
We are mobilizing all available forces for this operation. We will be doing everything to ensure that it does justice to France's reputation as a country that provides asylum and places much emphasis on brotherhood.
On Tuesday, the excavators will move in and demolish the tents and makeshift housing. But what will happen to those who refuse to leave Calais, who are determined to make it to the UK, where they have family and friends and where they believe their future lies? Christian Salom once more.
The French state doesn't want any sort of reception area for migrants in Calais anymore. So they will sleep under bridges in derelict houses, and those who are caught will be sent to deportation camps where there is already space available.
Pierre-André from the charity in France Terre d'Asile says demolishing the jungle camp won't solve anything.
We can't resolve the refugee issue in one day, but today, here and now, we are talking about the slum of Calais, not about refugees in Calais in general. That question has been unresolved for 20 years. Calais is an exit point out of the Schengen area, and on the other side of the Channel lies an island. We will have to negotiate with the British to stop all those who want to get to the UK from congregating here.
And the citizens of Calais, what do they think of the demolition of the camp?
It won't change anything. Those who want to go to England will stay here in Calais.
Eunice Wanjiru presented that report by Barbara Kostolnik.
Making a difference.
Now, how much waste does an average person in Senegal produce each year? The answer is 116 kilograms, according to a new mobile phone app created in the West African country. The app, a basic prototype, was developed by a group of students at a summer workshop in Dakar. The idea was to get them thinking about how to find local environmental solutions to global problems by using social media. Emmanuel Lande met up with one of the students behind the app in Dakar and filed this report.
Every morning in Dakar, the rubbish collection truck does its rounds. Familiar with its melodic honking, residents emerge from their homes to drop off their household trash. Forget recycling, plastic, paper, polystyrene, compost. Nothing is sorted, everything is dumped. 21-year-old Sohna Awasek lives in the suburbs. While she doesn't have much experience with creating mobile phone apps, Dakar's waste problem is something she knows a lot about. So when she had the opportunity to create an app at a workshop hosted by non-profit German cultural organisation the Goethe Institute, she decided to design something that would help educate residents about how to sort their waste and to show them that plastics, metals and paper can be recycled.
Here in Senegal, there's rubbish everywhere. People don't have the culture of recycling waste at home or of having recycling bins in their neighbourhoods. In Europe, recycling systems are common and waste is considered a raw material, but in Senegal, it's not seen that way.
Her app is called Ordure, which translates to solid gold. It's a play on the French word ordure, meaning rubbish, rubbish that could be worth its weight in gold. Scrolling on her smartphone, Sohna shows me how Ordure works.
Our application aims to help people to understand the principle of recycling waste. There's information on how to recycle, and there's also a quiz which shows people what they can do and how much waste each person in Senegal produces every day.
Sohna is one of 27 students who created an environment-focused mobile phone app in just 3 days as part of the Goethe Institute summer program. The Institute's Bouya Fall coordinated the event.
We focused on the environment, the challenges and the risks, and how they can live in a healthy environment to inspire them to create their own applications.
For the workshop, the Institute called on Majangali, an after-school program that trains students to use new technologies. Fittingly, Majangali means education in the local Wolof language. Christelle Scharf is co-founder of Mjangali and professor of computer science at Pace University in New York.
So the goal is to introduce young people to computing, but also to make them be much more knowledgeable about the environment. So it's applying computing to something, because we did not want them just to develop something. We wanted them also to gain some knowledge in another area.
To create their basic applications, the participants used MIT App Inventor, a simple-to-use drag-and-drop tool.
What we wanted to show young people is that you can consume technology, be on Facebook and use all these tools, but you can also contribute. And here also in Senegal, as it's a developing country, I mean, there are tons of different solutions that anybody can contribute to.
That report was compiled by Emmanuel Lande in Dakar.
Africa Link, your gateway to the stories that are moving Africa. From October 31st, live at 16 UTC or as audio on demand. From DW in Germany.
And before we leave you, a reminder of some of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli has marked 1 year since he was elected. He still has 4 more years to go. French authorities have started clearing thousands of migrants from a makeshift camp near the northern port of Calais. We've also been hearing about an app developed by students in Senegal that helps in providing information on recycling waste material. There we come to the end of the program. You can comment on the stories that we've reported by sending an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160957-59510. For more news, visit our website, that is dw.com/Africa. And I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, wishing you a splendid day ahead.